Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome Patrick Parker to the podcast. Welcome, Patrick.
Hey, how are you doing, James?
Doing well, thank you. Now, Patrick, for those that may not be familiar with you, have had the opportunity to meet you, you are the Asset Management and Reliability Program Manager at Rockwell Automation. You know, you're heavily involved with SMRP. See its conferences. I know you're on a few different committees. You're a track lead. So you're heavily involved in maintenance and reliability. But tell us a bit about yourself. How did you get into maintenance and reliability? And what do you do there at Rockwell?
Well, for starters, for maintenance and reliability, I kind of got started with the Navy. So I was in the United States Navy and their nuclear reactor side. As an electronics technician. So working on all the control systems for the reactors and eventually doing like maintenance supervision, maintenance planning, which, you know, we didn't call it that when I was in. But I did have the opportunity when I got out to start this role with Rockwell. And that's when I really started to learn about maintenance and reliability in the civilian sector and how a lot of what the Navy has developed over, especially on the nuclear side over the last 50, 60 years, is actually either best practice or along with what a lot of the stuff that we talk about and recommend in the real world. So I kind of got a hands-on experience with that, you know, with writing job plans and doing lockout, tagout and doing all that stuff, you know, as a young 19, 20-year-old before I even really knew what it was and what the impact of it was. Now in my current role, I'm involved with customer programs that have sought out Rockwell for different services, mainly around our own product lines, but looking at contractual services for maintenance and reliability. So helping them understand how to better use their install base, whether it's third party or Allen Bradley, Rockwell Automation. And it's more of a consultative type role, but then also involved in the back end with some more extensive programs that our customers have.
All right. Excellent. So definitely keep you busy. And, you know, what I think about a maintenance and reliability program, you know, there's something that kind of underpins all of them for good or for bad. And, you know, that's culture. And at the SMRP symposium, you talked about culture. So what is culture and why is it so important?
It's good that you bring that up. So, you know, the whole reason I even came about this concept was you do root cause analysis, right? And you're with these with customers or within your own organization and you're doing root cause analysis. And we know that there's the different levels, right? You have the physical level where the actual physical failure happens. You have the human level, which is where, you know, the human either did a process wrong or there was some kind of human intervention where it kind of led to the physical failure. Digging even deeper when you get into more the either the system design or the process design, all the way down into this like latent level, right? And we always want to try and get to the latent level when we're doing these root cause analysis. So time after time doing that, it kept coming down to culture, right? It kept coming down to, well, our culture is bad, or, you know, the reason that the operator didn't, you know, do this process was because he didn't think it was important. Well, it's because he didn't value that it was important. And so every time we did one of these, it kept coming down to culture. Well, if culture is the root cause, you know, what can we learn about culture to kind of understand how we can affect it to mitigate a lot of these failures that we're seeing at the physical level in our equipment? So that link is kind of what spurred me to into all this. And culture itself, you know, talking about what that is, it's common shared beliefs, goals, values, practices within a specific group, right? So if you're talking about a maintenance organization, you know, what do they believe in? What do they value? What are they doing practice wise, right? Are they firefighting? Are they not firefighting? Do they enjoy firefighting? Is it something that, you know, that they kind of help bring about, right? We always talk about the reliability side is always kind of never gets the pat on the back, right? It's the guy that came in at 2 a.m. to get everything running. When you look at that, every department has its own culture because they have their own set shared of values and beliefs. So all of that kind of factors in back into this, you know, why is the equipment failing? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned about what is it value? And you hit the nail on the head where some cultures want to be valued for being the firefighter, getting in there, fixing as fast as possible, you know. And that's what they value. They don't value the guy who methodically went through and found all these issues and corrected them before it interrupted production. And I think that plays a huge role in what our maintenance and reliability programs look like.
Yeah, oftentimes I think we do kind of tend to focus on the, I'll call it like the nerdy stuff, right? Looking at the math and the KPIs. And, you know, I'm on the best practices committee with SMRP, right? You know, we discuss in depth a lot of the verbiage and wording and how we're calculating these best practices KPIs. But really it comes down to what's behind those measures and how are we looking at how the culture is affecting everything, driving, whether it's all the way to the goals, right? The goals we're setting is based off of what we're valuing and what we believe in as an organization, all the way up to the company level and the C-suite, right? So there is this overall large impact to culture. And we're starting to see that a lot, not just in manufacturing or in maintenance and reliability, but, you know, just in business in general, where it's starting to become very valuable.
Absolutely. Now, with culture being so important, how is culture formed?
Going back to those things that make up culture, right? And if you look at the definition and you break it out. So to me, I like to think of it as you know, like planets being formed, right? You have all these gases and different elements swirling around in space. Somehow they collide, create some gravity, and pull each other together. So like every culture is different because they're all built up of these different components of, you know, of what they value, right? Of what they believe in, of what they're practicing, the goals that they're setting, and the attitudes that they have while they're doing it all. And that's why everything is different when you're looking at it specifically between different organizations or departments, even people, right? Even people within those departments or within those organizations have their own culture back in their family system, what their experiences have given them. So it becomes very kind of intense, and it really starts to build out when you start looking at all the different things that help kind of form culture, right? You know, because you have the impact of one person and his life experiences and what he values, bringing that to the table with a bunch of different other people and creating this kind of collective group, right? And how everybody affects each other. So very interesting.
So this culture has the ability to really impact how we run our assets, how we design our assets, how we do all these things. To me, it seems like that culture is an asset into itself, good or bad. It's an asset, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And that was the whole concept that I presented in at the symposium for SMRP in Phoenix this year. You know, it was, we never look at culture as the actual asset that we need to maintain. And why is that? Because, you know, if you look at what we know about culture, it should be considered an asset. An asset, and if you look at ISO 55000, an asset is it's defined as something that actually will give a unique value to an organization, right? Something is specifically, quote unquote, something that has potential or actual value to an organization. Well, if you look at some research that was done by Cotter and Heskett and their paper that they wrote, and they did a survey, actual firms that had good operating cultures within their firms actually saw revenue go up by over 600% compared to firms that didn't. So if we say that that's valuable, right? There's value generation in having a culture, and we know that culture is unique based off of this kind of conglomerate of values, beliefs, attitudes, and goals. And it's unique to the people that are within that collective, whether it's within the maintenance department or within the one manufacturing facility. So if we have that unique value, then why is it not an asset? It should be something that we're trying to manage along with our other asset systems because they affect each other.
Absolutely. And, you know, if we manage it properly, we should be able to improve it just like we do our other assets and our other systems and those sorts of things. Now, how can having this culture, and maybe it's not the best culture, the most ideal culture that we want, how does that cause failures or induce failures in not only our assets, but our asset management system?
Well, it goes back to, looking at the different components, right? If you're looking at those practices and goals, looking at how we're approaching them. So if we're valuing that firefighting mentality, right? Going back, it's always just a good example, especially for our industry. Valuing that firefighting, it actually will create these behaviors that induce these kind of failures, right? Where we're looking at, we value the uptime, right? So uptime above everything. And so that's what the maintenance guy is working for, right? He's working to get the machine running. He doesn't care how it's put together. He doesn't care whether or not it's going to run for 10 years or 1 week, or to the next weekend, right? He just cares that it's running now. And he believes that firmly that he is going to get rewarded for that. He trusts that this is what they want because this is what's being enforced and this is what's being practiced and preached daily, right? It's not so much the words written on the wall or on the fancy poster. We see that all the time in different companies. That doesn't mean anything. It's the actual actions that we're taking and the conversations we have in these meetings. That's where these values and these attitudes and stuff are expressed and how they kind of trickle through the organization and end up impacting the equipment. How we are forming our KPIs too. We can talk about that here in a little bit, but all of these things go into how culture causes failure, right? And it's all because a failure of the culture itself.
Yep, absolutely. KPIs plays a big role in that. What is up on the board versus what is said actually on the shop floor, very, very different. All those can lead to that, the failures within our assets or within our systems. Now, with culture being so important, and we hear a lot of organizations saying that, we need to fix our culture, we need to change our culture, we need to do this or that. How do we go about actually starting to try and change or influence the culture for the better?
It's good that you mentioned that, right? A lot of times what you see, especially, and in my experience, it's like whether they're kicking off a maintenance and reliability program, or if you look at different other giant change initiatives right within organizations, they're always like, we need to change the culture. Okay, what does it need to be changed to, right? I don't think you really ever get a clear definition of what that is. And I think that's because people don't really understand what it should be. And with that, there actually is like research done out there that you can look at. If you look at, there's a model out there that when I was putting this together and having all these thought processes, I found, it's called the competing values framework. And what that framework states is that at different parts of life within an organization, their actual values needed are different and they change between different parts, right? If you're looking at an early part of an organization where they're being really innovative, right? A startup company, they need what this model calls like an open system model. And with that, they need to value flexibility. They need to value readiness, all for the ends of kind of growth and applying resources. On the flip side, if you look at something that's kind of more in this sustainability side, they're already in their kind of mode. They're creating, they're producing product, right? They want this more internal process model of values. And with that, it's more about managing information, managing communications, all to kind of make sure that we're stable and that we have control of what's going on. So it's not just saying we need to change the culture. It's understanding the culture that you need for your given operating scenario, whether you're a greenfield application or a new plant that's being just put in, or if you're an old plant that has a lot of set in kind of bad culture, or not even, I want to say bad, right? Maybe it's just different or not needed. And then additionally, and this is something that I didn't talk about a whole lot in this presentation, but the skills gap and talent. You have a lot of new young people coming in with different skill sets that have different experiences and bring about the different cultural parts, and they're going to impact your organization. And so it's understanding that large gap as well with the new incoming talent and how to manage that.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
Yeah, absolutely. And that competing values framework, I've seen that in other organizations. And what's interesting is some parts of the organization may need to be that, you know, flexible, open type, where other parts need to be that internal process focused. And I think what causes issues sometimes is, you know, if you take a line, for example, you know, they're trying to run some new products, innovation, they got to get these things out fast and do all these things. You got to be open and flexible with that. But at the same time, it's a manufacturing process. You need to have that internal process focus as well. And I think, you know, sometimes you get those two competing values, if you will, at the same part. Everyone's confused on what is actually required because we're getting told two different things and so on and so forth. And, you know, I think that just leads to some confusion and doesn't help the culture.
No, it does. And if you look at culture itself, right, and you go back to what we talked about with the definition and it's how it being a collectiveness, but culture actually provides a function. Or has functionality. And there's been some research that was done on the Tobriyan Islands. This is, you know, going back and looking at kind of like anthropology and that whole study within the university system. But culture has functionality. And if culture has functionality, then it can functionally fail. And having these competing values or this misalignment, really, kind of, you know, misalignment of values is one way that culture can fail and then end up impacting your equipment, right? If a maintenance person is there trying to maintain a piece of equipment and keep it at some operational level of reliability, right? Trying to keep it running when it needs to run to some extent. And if you're constantly changing things around him, right? And in this kind of like open system model with flexibility, it's hard for him to manage all those different demands and all of that change while he's trying to keep something running. And it's understanding and aligning the organization to say, let's manage that change a little bit better. How can we kind of bridge that gap between these two value frameworks? You need both value frameworks. And we're in like research and development and then maintenance organization, right? They need kind of different ones. But aligning them together and to that kind of common goal and understanding and controlling that. So these are some ways that we can actually change the culture and help mitigate kind of the failure or the functional failures of culture.
Yes, absolutely. Now, with that, how do goals and practices fit into driving that culture change? You know, we have these competing values. How do we leverage goals and standard practices or SOPs and those sorts of things to drive that change?
One thing that, and how I kind of think of it together, right? So we talk about the components of culture, the beliefs, values, you know, practices and attitudes and goals, right? If you break them up into two different kind of sets, I think of, you know, you have one set where you have that affect effectiveness of the organization, and you have another set that affects kind of the sustainability of the organization. So if you're looking at the beliefs and values are more on the sustainability side, right? Those are the things that are going to impact kind of how sustainable your reliability program is or your new product line is in terms of operating in a certain way, where your habits and your practices, right, your goals are going to be more how effective you are at implementing that system, right? And so those attitudes and goals are kind of, they kind of work together to create this, ability for you to be able to do what you need and know it's going to work, right? Sometimes though, in order to have that happen, especially if you're looking at on the goals side, is creating a safety net. If you look at, so everybody, I'm sure, has heard of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but there is actually some truth to that. And if a an organization or a department, if they're not felt safe, then how can we expect them to focus on becoming better and being effective in this reliability program or being effective in achieving these goals that we're setting forth for them, right? Because these goals are requiring them to put forth extra effort and, you know, for them to be successful and for the organization to be successful. And if we're not supporting them, either as a manager or as a leader, and this is from the C-suite all the way down to, you know, the maintenance manager on the shop floor to the, you know, the maintenance supervisor, team lead. If we're not supporting our guys and our people to be able to make them feel like they don't have anything else they need to worry about, right? If they're emotionally safe and physically safe and all of that, all of those play into those goals and those practices so we can actually achieve what we need to.
All right. So we got to, you know, make sure all those are aligned, make sure, you know, we're considering Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that they're feeling safe, both mentally and physically. We got to do all these things to help drive that culture change. Now, are there any frameworks or tools or stuff that tells us more at a tactical level how to change culture?
There is. And so going back, you know, I mentioned Cotter, right, earlier with that research that he did. From that research, he developed a framework. And so organizational change, he said, is broken up into kind of 8 steps. And those 8 steps are, you know, create urgency, create a coalition, develop vision strategy, communicate the vision, empower action, get quick wins, leverage those wins, and then finally kind of embedded into the culture. He did write a book called Leading Change, where he kind of discusses these 8 steps. That methodology is good from an organizational perspective, but you still have to, going back to like where every individual has their own culture, and you still need to be able to impact and affect the individual level as well. And so there is a framework that's called ADCAR that's used all throughout business as well. And we can use that model to kind of understand at the individual level what we need to do and roll that into Cotter's 8 step, right? And just so briefly, you know, the ADCAR model is awareness. So create awareness, desire, knowledge. So knowledge of how to change, give the individual the ability to change, right? And then reinforcing that change. So those are some good general models that are out there for how to change culture, both at the individual level and at the organizational level.
All right. They're both great models. And I think you hit the nail on the head with it. You know, the ADCAR is let's change the individual. Let's get them moving in the right direction, where leading change is more the organizational. What do we have to do at that level to drive large change, systemic change, those sorts of things? They're both very good models. You know, I use ADCAR all the time. It's a great model. Now, what are some tactical steps that we can tell our listeners out of one of those models that they can do to help start moving this in the right direction?
So if you're depending on your position in your organization, but for me, for anybody, regardless of position, you know, everyone can be a leader, and I firmly believe that, right? I firmly believe that everybody can be a leader within their organization, whether if you're listening to this and you're a maintenance guy or a maintenance planner, all the way to, you know, the director of maintenance for an organization, right? You can do these kind of what I call like these 4 things, but one is like measure with intent, right? And so whether it's a technician, you know, actually measuring something on this piece of equipment or putting some KPIs together, all the way to, you know, the director of maintenance is kind of looking systemically, you know, measure with intent. The KPIs that we use, we oftentimes will just use KPIs to because we think it's something we can measure and find out, right? Or we have this data, you know, let's try and figure out what we can measure. When really the conversation should be, this is the behavior that we want. So this is what we need to measure, because that you're going to create behavior from that, from measuring those things, right? So having that behavioral component in there. So that's why I say measure with intent. Provide the necessary needs to the people. This goes back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So whether you're with a maintenance guy, you know, you can help with that within your own department, right? Be a leader and, you know, help people understand, you know, that things are okay at that level, right? And then from a more managerial leadership side, you want people to feel safe and provide those things. Value according to the vision is a way that I put that, saying that those values need to align with the vision of the firm and with the department at hand. So kind of understanding that alignment that we talked about with the competing values framework. And then support. So provide support by doing what is right. Not necessarily what is in your best interest, but, you know, kind of that service kind of attitude and doing what's right for the organization, doing what's right for your team, and supporting them along the way. So those are things I think that everybody can do to be successful and to help change the culture, no matter what their role is.
Yeah, and I think those are some great tactical things that our listeners can take away and use. Because changing culture is not easy. It's a time-consuming, difficult process. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be lots to it. So aside from those tactical steps, what would you tell our listeners to do that are looking to change the culture? Where do they start? Which model do they choose? How do they understand where they need to start addressing the cultural issues? Any words of wisdom?
Yeah. So, you know, we're all into this asset management. We talked about how culture is an asset earlier. And I if you just use your general like RCM, Reliability Center Maintenance model, I think it's a good way that you can go about changing the culture, right? Because with that, it's always about understanding what your culture is and how it can fail. So, you know, if we look at that RCM process, it's first about understanding where your culture is and does it currently fit what's needed, right? And you can do this at the individual level all the way to, you know, an entire business. Understanding what's needed and finding out what those gaps are. Is it functioning the way it should? So where would the things that aren't functioning, right? You know, or sorry, the parts of the culture that's needed, you know, understanding those functions and if they're failing. And if they're failing, why are they failing? And it's breaking it down to looking at even deeper than values and attitudes. You know, if you look at a belief system, belief is actually built off of trust and truths that we know. So if there isn't trust within that department or within your team, why, right? And how can we help build trust to affect the kind of beliefs, right, of our culture? And so it's understanding those functional failures, mapping those out like you would in the reliability-centered maintenance model, and then going and then fixing those attributes that you can affect. You know, you can even put in together priority ranking, right, based off of what you need. You can go that far if you want to. But to me, that's a good roadmap and a place to start is, you know, first understand what your culture is, define the functions that you need, does it fit, and then go from there.
All right, excellent. Now, you know, we can get into that technical level of detail, and sometimes that may be required to get to that level of detail, right? If it's a significant change, if it's very targeted change, those sorts of things. Now, what is the one thing you think makes the biggest difference in being successful? Is it getting to that right level of change or right level of detail? Is it communication? What is it?
To me, it's communication and commitment. So those two things. And I want to put a kind of point on communication. So there's a book out there, and it went viral a year or two ago, actually, by an author named Simon Sinek. And he talks about this whole start with why concept. And the reason he says you start with why is because, you know, people are drawn to this kind of belief, right? So people don't believe in what you do. They believe in why you do it. That's kind of like his quote, right? And so he talks about when you communicate that you need to communicate by starting with your why, not necessarily with what. And so to me, this is the biggest piece that I think everybody can kind of take away as well. If there's like one thing that can make the biggest difference is communicate your why. Or your firm's why, and understanding what that is and how we can go about doing that. I don't think businesses do a good idea in expressing that. So people people within their own organizations have a hard time understanding why they're there. Like, why are you showing up to work every day? Right. All the way down to the janitor. You know, there's everybody has a job, and that job provides value. And it's understanding how everybody fits together and communicating that. And even down to the individual level, why am I here? Why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah. And, you know, that why is so important. So if you haven't read that book, I highly recommend it, you know, Why by Simon Sinek. It is very, very good about understanding why it's so important for people to understand that why, how it triggers a bunch of different things in our thought process, our subconscious, all these different things. And, you know, if we can get that why, the rest becomes much easier.
Yeah, you know, I agree, right? And even in that quote I said, right, he talks about believe or believing. That goes back to culture, right? A culture is these shared beliefs. And so I've even seen the kind of misconstrued with, why are we here? Well, we are here to make this product, or we are here to provide this to the customer. No, that's not why are you here? Why? What is anybody can provide that. That's already out there, right? This product already exists. Why are you here? What is the difference? What value are you bringing to people, right? And this is where you start to see, I think, because you are seeing a movement within business where you're having this sustainability outside of the business being a part of it, right? And everybody's starting to integrate that together. It's becoming more and more important to be able to communicate that and to be able to understand why you're here as a firm.
Yes, absolutely. Now, with that, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation today? Is it to go read the Why book by Simon Sinek or watch the TED Talk? Is it read one of these other books? You know, is it get thinking about what behaviors do we want to change and cultural issues do we want to change? What is it?
You know, the one thing I would say, the one action that the listeners could go walk away with today would be to look at what your values are, and how do they fit in with the organization, and if they don't fit, why? Is because we all have our own values, and so at the individual level, we all value something, right? Whether it's money or success, you know, what is the definition of success, right? We can have a whole conversation around that, but understanding what your values are, and then understanding how those values can be leveraged within your organization, right? We are all really capable beings, and we can all do really great things. But first we need to understand what we value and what those great things we can do are.
Excellent, excellent words of wisdom there. Find out what your values are. Do they align with the company's why? You know, start there. Work on yourself first. I've heard that from many different people that talk about leadership and changing culture and, you know, lead and, you know, all those different things. But they always say to start reflecting internally and then go from there. Because if you don't understand yourself, your why, your values, it's very hard to help influence and shift others' people's.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, right? And this is like, we all have that, our own journey in discovering that. And it will change, just like that competing values framework, right? You know, as we get older, when our experiences happen, and, you know, when we change jobs, have kids, you know, move to different parts of countries that have different cultures, you know, how we're influenced, you know, these things are going to constantly change. So there's always this reflection internally of, you know, what do I value? Why do I value that? And what, you know, how is it important? Because it will affect other people around you, as their values will affect you, right? And that's kind of all of these cultural components coming together.
Absolutely. Well, Patrick, it's been a pleasure having you on to talk about culture, how do we shift culture, all those things, great things. But before we go, where can people find out more about you? What activities or events are you at? That sort of stuff.
So for me personally, you know, I'm on LinkedIn. You can just search Patrick Parker and I'll be there. If you want to know more about Rockwell Services, you can always go on Rockwell Automation's website. If you happen to be in the Chicago area, actually there's a huge trade show coming up in the end of November for 2 days, where there'll be a lot of industrial automation leaders there, you know, Fluke, Fanuc Robotics and stuff like that. So there'll be some, I will not be there personally, but there will be some really cool things to see. But outside of Rockwell, I am involved very heavily with SMRP. So I presented at the annual conference this year. I plan to next year as well, as well as being involved with the maintenance reliability community. And then outside of the maintenance reliability community, I'm passionate on STEM education. I really think that that's something that's very important and can affect entire industries actually for future generations. So that's something that I'm passionate about outside of all of that.
All right. Excellent. I'll make sure to put links to all those things you mentioned, your LinkedIn profile, Rockwell Automation, SMRP, all those great things. Now, do you have a favorite resource you want to share with our listeners for those that are looking to shape their culture, learn more about what we've talked about?
Yeah. So there's a couple of, I mentioned some research today, but I can tell you that some of the books that had the biggest impact on me was that Start With Why book by Simon Sinek. He has another one called Leaders Eat Last. And he actually just released one a week ago called The Infinite Game. And that one talks about having an infinite mindset and talk about, that kind of goes back to the values conversation. But on top of that, there's another book that is called The Culture Code. So that's another really good book to read that has a wonderful story that tells basically the author went and studied some of the best performing teams in different sectors, like looking at the Navy SEAL Team Unit 6, looking at, the restaurateur in New York that has had a lot of success and what he does. So he does a lot of these and provides examples and talks about kind of this code that kind of brings it all together. So very good book.
Excellent. I will make sure to put links to those in the show notes as well. Well, Patrick, once again, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you about culture. How do we manage our most important asset, our culture or your culture? Definitely provide some insights and some more things for people to think about on how do we influence and drive the required changes. So thank you.
Hey, no problem, man. Anytime, again, if anybody has questions, I know that's going to listen to this, always feel free to reach out and I can help maybe either provide clarity on some concepts or help anything understand. It was a pleasure. I really enjoyed discussing this and, have a wonderful day, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.